Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
When we think of science, we tend to think of logical certainties and sensible explanations for things we see in the world around us. What goes up must come down, and so on. There are, however, limits to this way of thinking about the world, and we're going to explore one of them today. We're joined by physicist Shane Berg, an associate professor at the UCD School of Education, to explore the laws of physics at the tiniest scale, Shane. That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's just completely different down there. So you and I and everything in the world is made up of atoms and molecules. But the physics that we use to describe the big world, why apples fall off trees, why planets go around stars, the stuff that we would associate with science we learned in school, it just doesn't work when it goes down to the tiny atomic scale. And that's wacky, because you think of science as being somewhat about certainties, as you said.
Yeah.
And so the fact that there's a discontinuity between the big world in which we live and then the world from which we are built, in other words, the building blocks, the fact that there's a difference there is unnerving as a scientist.
So scientific common sense doesn't work when we're talking about the teeny tiny things.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the end of the 19th century, physicists were incredibly cocky. They thought that they just knew everything. And this was reflected in culture at the time. But of course, they got a rude awakening because they were starting to observe things in nature that they couldn't explain using their models. So physicists develop models to try and explain the world. And sometimes they work, sometimes they have limits. And they reached a really hard limit at the end of the 19th century when they realized that very basic things that they were observing in nature couldn't be explained. So they needed to invent new science, new physics, something called quantum science. And it's almost 100 years since some of the groundbreaking work has been done. And it has taken 100 years for technology and material science to catch up. So the things that physicists and mathematicians were dreaming about or theorizing about 100 years ago are now becoming real. We're in a quantum age.
Mm.
We have technologies, we have computers, we have information systems, communication systems, etc., that are being built using quantum technology, tapping into these spooky materials, as Einstein called them, at the tiny scale. And so in respect of that, UNESCO have designated 2025 the International Quantum Year, which is quite the feat.
So can we go back to the cocky guys then in the 19th century? What were the things they were observing in nature which made them start to doubt themselves?
Yeah, they realised that very fundamental things like energy was in fact coming out in little packets called quanta. So quanta means amount. And so they realised that these things, when you look down to the tiny scale, were actually in tiny little packets. Einstein also realised through an experiment called the photoelectric effect that light coming off from materials wasn't continuous either. They came out in particular colours, and they couldn't explain that using the models they had. And so they really was, when they started doing the mathematics on it, they found that there are the most extraordinary properties of materials at this phase. Things like the idea that a material could be in multiple places at once. That's a reality on the quantum scale. Or perhaps that things can tunnel through solid barriers. Or finally, that you might have two materials that are able to instantly communicate with each other over an infinite distance.
Yeah, you see, this is where everything starts to, started to get all disconnected
too,
and flipped over. Well, I'm glad to hear that. So how can something be in two places at once?
Well, I should say, Richard Feynman, the great physicist, said, if you understand, or you say you understand quantum physics, then you don't understand quantum physics, which was, of course, a bit of a joke. But as to your question, how can something be in multiple places at once? It goes to the nature of matter at this scale. We tend to think of atoms as being kind of marble-like. They exist in a single point. In fact, at the tiny scale, materials and matter are spread out over a possibility of places, kind of a cloud of possibilities. This is really mind-bending. The way I would think about it and the way I say it to students is, we call that, by the way, a superposition. You can be in more than one position at once.
Superposition.
Yeah, the way I say it to students is, imagine you're thinking of a friend who isn't with you at the moment, mm-hmm. and you know they're at home, right? But you don't know what they're doing at that time. So you can imagine the possibilities. They could be on their phone, they could be asleep, they could be listening to the Claire Byrne programme, they could be having their dinner, they could be singing the national anthem, or they could be standing on the roof. Some of those things are more probable than others, But until you go and check what they're doing, they're in a superposition of all of those things at once. So they're somehow in
a mixed state. Because they're doing one thing. In my imagination, they're in all of those positions. Right.
And that's exactly what the physics says too. It's just, it's that they somehow they behave when you observe them through experiment as if they are in all places at once. Of course, that doesn't work for our imagined friend at home, but the idea of being in more than one place, that superposition, that analogy holds. And so when you look at the experimental effect of materials on that scale, you see that they do behave as if they're in multiple places at once until you look at them.
So this is where the Schrodinger's cat theory came from.
Yes, beloved by political commentators to describe paradoxes, right? So, for example, a TD somehow being in a party and out of a party at once when it comes to deciding committee chairs, for example, right? So this is the idea that Schrodinger, the famous physicist, developed, just a thought experiment. He didn't harm any cats, I should stress. And he said, imagine a cat in a box and there's a poison in the box and it may or may not kill the cat. Right. Until you open the box, you don't know whether the cat is alive or dead. So the cat is in a superposition. It is both dead, alive, and also alive and dead at the same time.
Except it is only one thing.
But you have to check.
I know.
And so in the quantum world, the material
is messing with my brain.
The material behaves as if it's in the mix of states until you look at it. And once you look at it, it picks a point and then that's it. And quantum materials do that too.
Simon has been in touch. I believe you're going to be talking about atoms. So my question is that if 90% of an atom is empty, how come things are so solid?
So that's due to a mix of various forces that atoms are subject to, where they repel their neighbours by virtue of things like positive and electric charges. But I remember years ago putting physics adverts on the DART train in Dublin. And one of the most popular ones was, is the person next to you standing too close? Question mark. And the response was, don't worry, they're mainly made of empty space. So, of course, all the matter in an atom tends to be at the centre of it, in the nucleus, surrounded by a cloud of electrons in a possibility of places, as we've been describing. But they act as if they're solid when really they're predominantly empty. But, of course, it's all to do with electric charges, and that's how we keep things apart. But, yeah, great question, Simon.
Thank you very much, Simon, for getting in touch. You mentioned earlier on as well, the ability to pass through solid barriers.
Sounds like Harry Potter, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So again, if you have a material and you're saying it's in a cloud of an envelope of possible places, right? And you that means it can exist in multiple places at once, right? So you imagine you take a material like that and you start firing it against a solid barrier, just like you would throw a tennis ball against a wall. Now, for the tennis ball at the big scale, it'll always bounce back and we've lots of physics to describe what'll happen. But at the tiny scale, where the material can exist in multiple places at once, there is a possibility that it might exist at the other side of the wall. And it's a low probability, but it isn't zero. So every so often, when you look at these atomic materials being fired against a barrier, you see that they exist on the opposite side. Now, this sounds crazy, but it actually explains how the sun works, because you take hydrogen atoms in the sun, you fuse them together through nuclear fusion to create helium. And that's only possible because of this tunneling or passing through effect. It's also how your phone stores all the photographs on it, all the data, all the memory in your phone is because of something called quantum tunneling. Otherwise, it'd be impossible to switch on and off the various things in your phone to store pictures of your cat or your holidays.
So what we're saying is scientists can't really be certain of where things are when they're dealing with things at this scale, this tiny scale.
Yeah, but listeners might be surprised to know that science can't be certain of anything. Right. So we tend to think of science as something about certainties. The only discipline in the university where they have certainties is maths. Everything else is about possibilities. But it's not that anything goes. Some possibilities are more probable than others. And it's up to the scientist to be able to convince their peers and the public as to which ones are worthy of attention and which ones are just nonsense.
So you don't know where things are. You don't know how fast they're moving.
No, we don't know how fast they're moving either. That's another thing. Yeah. So we can look at the movement of these subatomic particles and we can tell either exactly where they are when we observe them, or we can tell how fast they're going, but we can't do both at once. It's like looking at a very fast object moving and taking a really high resolution photograph of it. You might be able to see exactly where it is, but you'd have no idea from the photograph on its own how fast it's going.
So you can tell that it's moving, but you just don't know how fast it's moving. Yeah. So that's a really good way of explaining it, I think, as well, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I remember learning these things in college like back in first year, many, many years ago. And we hadn't been taught them much in school, and just thinking like, this is absolutely nuts. How can something be in multiple places at once? How can it pass through barriers? And the other one that I haven't told you about yet is, how can these objects be separated by huge distances and somehow instantly communicate with each other? And that was the one that Einstein was very unhappy about, because it seemed that materials information was able to travel faster than the speed of light, which is a universal speed limit in physics. And so he was very, very unsure about that. But it does work. It's real.
Mm-hmm. So this is things that are instantly connected over
huge distances.
Yeah, it's called
quantum entanglement. And this is the future of cryptography, right? So you can take two of these particles, you can somehow mix them up, swirl them, as it were, and it's called entanglement. And then you can separate them as far apart as possible. And if you, they're both together at the start in this blurry superposition, right? So just imagine they have options of being switched up, switched down, right? When they're in this mixed up position, they're up, down, and they're up slash down. So they're in this kind of superposition. If you observe one, right, and you say it's up, that means the other one is instantly down, right? So it's the act of observing one changes the other. And that's a wacky, a spooky action at a distance. And so we're now able to use this to send encrypted messages over huge distances. And the beauty of this is that if anyone else kind of starts to eavesdrop on the conversation, then the whole system falls apart. So it's
how does it know to do that?
How does it know to fall apart?
Yeah.
Because as soon as somebody looks at it, whether they are the eavesdropper or the intended receiver, the system changes. Right, as if by magic.
The ups become downs,
exactly.
And the downs become ups.
Yeah, and they lose this superposition state. And so that means that the security services that might be sending the signals back and forth from one another know somebody's listening. This is happening in the real world. The Chinese published that they have been sending signals from a satellite in space to the ground, a distance of 1,200 kilometres, using this entangled technology. And I've no doubt that militaries around the world are probably doing this to a far better extent, but they're just not telling us about it.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Does this cause a level of scientific discomfort, all of this uncertainty?
Absolutely. It really does. And I think quantum science is an area where philosophers and physicists can kind of enjoy questions together, because it brings up questions about the nature of reality. If something is different when you look at it from when it is otherwise, then it really begs the question, is anything real, or are we just looking at an approximation of it? And that's nuts, because it's not a case that we just haven't got the skill yet to reduce the uncertainty. What the laws of physics are telling us is that there is an inherent uncertainty at the smallest scale, and that's just the way it is. And so it really brings deeper questions about how we perceive reality, what is real, and our relationship to it.
It's mind-bending, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All these things we've learned, superposition and quantum entanglement.
Yeah, and there's technologies that are being built on these. So, there's this whole world of quantum computing that's being developed. And I read yesterday in a physics journal of a Chinese publication where they're building computers that, instead of using the traditional on and off switches, the ones and the zeros, the binary that we associate with regular computers, they're now using on off and then finally on and off. So they call those a quantum bit as opposed to a regular bit. And you're able to do super fast processing. The paper I read said that it was able to do a computational process that was faster than a computer at a billion years.
They have a cat in a box, is what you're telling me. Shane, thank you so much. Shane Bergen there.